A hideous subterranean monster mounts a political campaign based on a completely false bootstrap narrative. But enough about the 2016 presidential race. Batman Returns is totally a Christmas movie, even if it was mid-June when it became the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
In America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America holiday edition, and I'm joined by two prisoners declaring that they are Zorro. It's Camila Adams.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
And Robin Hitchcock.
Bien, gracias.
That scene was so weird because clearly the first rule of Zorro is you do not talk about that you're Zorro.
Right.
And yet it's like confusing. Zorro was never going to be like, yep, it's me, I'm Zorro.
It's the I am Spartacus strategy, which in the movies always works.
The only other thing I have to say about Zorro, I didn't respond to this last week. Wait. Catherine Zeta-Jones is Welsh?
She's Welsh.
Yes.
She's not even a little bit something?
Oh, I mean, listen.
I just always assumed, mainly because of casting choices, that there was some Latin blood in there somewhere, and I think that may have been by... Right, right. At least Anthony Hopkins has the decency to obviously not be what he's like. And to go way back, I forgot to mention last week... This is our infrequently occurring segment, Dane DeHaan Talk. a listener reached out to me to say he had gone to high school with Dane DeHaan and they were in, you know, high school productions together. And he is to this day stunned that Dane DeHaan is a famous actor because of all the people around. Dane DeHaan was the one who he thought, well, this guy doesn't care about being here at all.
That's shocking to me when you told me that. And he was just kind of like, meh, whatever, acting, I guess.
Gonna go make a living out of it with this face.
Right. Like, yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, too. It's like, yes, we discussed that he's not necessarily, you know, movie star handsome at all or close to just like, you know, high school crush handsome either, but it's just like how is that your fallback? Like, what were his other he had no other skills? That
does he have family in the business?
Maybe
that's like the only explanation.
How many family Hollywood businesses live in central Pennsylvania where this Facebook message I got was coming from? Like, yeah, at a certain point you're like, this guy does not have the looks, the talent, or the passion.
Right.
How did he get here?
Fucking A.
Who let him in?
The confidence of a mediocre white man. That is Dane DeHaan, apparently, is the is the embodiment of that phrase.
Have the confidence of Dane DeHaan.
Right. That slots right into that phrase perfectly. And he went on to report that when in a show Dane DeHaan had to convey anger, he would like close his eyes and scrunch up his face and scream at the sky.
Method.
Which is exactly what he did in Chronicle. So
I guess he feels if it ain't broke. You know?
Yeah.
It got me this far.
But more importantly than Dane DeHaan, as most things are, it's the holiday season, and we landed on a movie that we had classified as Holiday Light. The same thing happened last year. We had While You Were Sleeping in Holiday Light, and then we watched it, and we were like, no, this is all the way a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Which I would say about Batman Returns.
Yeah. You said it was released in June.
Yeah.
And even though... it is, I will absolutely say it's a Christmas movie. I don't understand why it had to be set in at Christmas. I really
Did
felt...
Shane Black ever do a rewrite pass? What happened?
I mean, I like this movie. I'm going to say nice things about it. But when you start getting to why with this movie...
things get dangerous.
Why is Penguin's gang circus folk?
Right.
Is this the only way Max Schreck has to solve his, like, weird permit problem? You know, it's not it's not a movie that holds up to a whole lot of narrative scrutiny.
This is true.
So I wonder if that mistletoe line that, you know, mistletoe can be deadly if you eat it, but a kiss can be even deadlier if you mean it. I wonder if that was the origin. If they were like, you know what, we should have this little call and response that lets Batman and Catwoman recognize each other while they're flirting. And
even then, it's like, it's not really even a good call and response thing. It's not really. Mistletoe is deadly if you eat it. Yeah.
Literally every time I see mistletoe.
Well, yeah, it's like, mistletoe is deadly if you eat it. We don't really.
It's completely Christmas soaked. And that action, that works against the plot at some point. There's that business where Max is like, Penguin, you're going to be mayor. And he's like, it's December.
That is so ridiculous.
The election was a month ago. Right. And Max is like, ah, we could find another election. Then what?
That was clearly somebody at some point said, why are they talking about an election in December? And they were like, just throw in a line, make it make sense. And I don't even think they picked the right make it make sense. Like, he was like, we'll do a recall. I'm like, make the election be next November. And it's like, you're starting a year long campaign. That makes much more sense to me.
I just assumed it was just going to be like a whole thing. And I could have missed it, that they were going to set up the current mayor to be thrown out.
That was what they were going to do.
Okay.
But then they don't really do that. I don't know. I got to say that there are parts of the plot of this movie that I just actively choose to not try to make sense. Like, Colin asked me a few times, like, the extent to which the supernatural is involved with Catwoman and Penguin's weirdness.
Right.
And I was like, as much as you want, right? Like, it can be zero. It can be everything.
Right.
Right. Like, and the movie doesn't decide, and you don't need to decide either.
Exactly.
Yeah, I have no idea on that one. That's in my notes. It's like, does something happen to her, or is she just pissed?
Whichever works.
Right.
Whatever works for you is the truth.
I mean, I could have, like, I've thought about Googling, like, the ancient Egyptian, whatever their mythology was around cats and the power in which they held, and thought maybe this was had something to do with it, but I just didn't care enough. And I was just like, okay, so she was just, like, you know, healed and empowered by the mystical powers of, you know, street cats. So. Right.
If you remember nothing but the cat suit and Penguin rolling around in a duck cart, here's a recap to make it clearer. My turn this week. Somebody tell me when to go.
Ready? Go.
Let's go by character. The Penguin was abandoned by his parents as a baby for having birth defects, but survived in the sewer and came to control a circusy gang and an army of literal penguins. Max Schreck is a developer who wants to suck power out of Gotham or something. The mayor won't let him do it, so he looks to install the Penguin as a new mayor by turning him into a folk hero for forgiving his long-dead parents for abandoning him. Selina Kyle is Schreck's long-suffering assistant, who accidentally finds his evil plan. He tries to murder her, but a comical number of awnings break her fall, and she becomes Catwoman because of nothing, really. She just becomes Catwoman. Batman kind of chills for a while to see how it'll play out, while Batman and Catwoman and Bruce and Selina simultaneously have sexual chemistry without putting two and two together. Batman ruins the Penguin's mayoral bid. Penguin comes up with a plan to kill all of Gotham's firstborn in revenge. Batman foils that. Penguin dies. Both Selina and Bruce unmask in front of Schreck for some reason. Bruce tries to get her to move in, but she's too damaged, so she kills Schreck, but probably survives while Batman is bummed about it.
Okay, you were 61 seconds.
Oh.
So close.
Yes.
But thorough.
Yes, extremely.
It's so hard to explain what happens in this movie.
It's a tone poem. You don't need to explain it.
A tone poem.
Also, isn't there, you might have said this, towards the end of your summary, I was really just staring at the clock. There's some kind of firstborn children narrative at some point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's mentioned that. Yeah.
So this is also a Passover movie.
Yes, absolutely. This is all. It's clearly Halloween. So there are so few holidays. There is nothing Irish because we didn't get much Commissioner Gordon. So other than St. Patrick's Day, it's all holidays.
Commissioner Gordon Irish?
In my head and heart, he
in
is.
In your like, Irish head and heart, he is.
Right. Yeah, few like, you know, mainstream blockbusters begin with straight up infanticide.
Yeah.
Just casting a baby into the river.
It's like, dude, like, first, like, the cage was bad enough. I was like, oh my God, they're keeping him in a cage. And then, oh, let's just toss him over the bridge. The fuck? What? And then it's Pee-wee Herman. and is his dad. We get Pee Wee Herman as his dad, but we don't bring him back later in the movie? I don't...
It's a nod that became a different nod. That was supposed to be Burgess Meredith, who was the Penguin in the 60s.
Oh, that would be great.
Who was not in health to do it at the time. So instead, Tim Burton said, I'm going to call back to my first feature, Pee Wee's Big Adventure, and got Paul Reubens. And Diane Salinger, who was Simone in Pee Wee's Big Adventure, was the mom.
Oh.
But it was never meant to be more. It was just meant to be a little Easter egg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It is just more distracting than it should be, personally.
Right, because I kept waiting for them to bring them back. Because, you know, I didn't know the actress's name, but she was very recognizable to me. It's like she's not like a, you know, household name, but she's one of those women that's like, yeah, like we get her and she's got some chops on her. Let's bring her back. But they say no words at all.
Just a little thing preceding the cut to 33 years later, which made me realize we're all older than the Penguin.
Yeah.
Older.
I had a lot to. I was like, am I supposed to believe that he is 33 years old? But then, you know, living in a sewer, I guess, is hard living. It constitutes as such. So
about a week ago, one of the hosts of the podcast You're Wrong About was live tweeting this movie. And she pointed out the 33 year old thing. And I just was laser focused on how weird that is the entire time.
I don't know how old anybody in this movie, like Bruce Wayne could be 27 or 50. same with Max Schreck. Selena is like, looks about mid 30s, but acts like she's 22.
And her decor of her apartment is like she's 13. So I was also very distracted by that. Like, how old is she supposed to be? She's got piles of stuffed animals. There's like a pink Barbie dream house happening. And
hello there.
Yeah.
Hell here.
I did like that. I appreciated that.
Me too. I gotta say, every time Catwoman is on the screen, I'm like, this is the greatest movie of all time. And every time she's not, I'm like, what is happening? And why? I just find Michelle Pfeiffer so magnetic and sexy and bizarre, and I just am 1000% buying what she is selling. I still think that Michael Keaton is a great Batman. I'm into it when he's around, although he's pretty bad at crime fighting in this, I gotta say.
Yeah,
dude gets shot like 15 times.
He doesn't do much.
No, he's like an afterthought in his own sequel, like in his own, it's Batman Returns. I'm like, yeah, but when, like, is he gonna
right, exactly. Also, I'm a little confused about, he goes from the scene where he's like, this Penguin guy is really inspiring. I connect to him as an orphan.
Right.
And then one scene later, he's like, I'm pretty sure the Penguin is the leader of the Red Triangle Gang. And it's like, wait, what? Did I miss something? I may have missed something.
No, I don't think you did.
No.
Okay. I know he's the world's greatest detective. Show me some detecting.
Alfred. It's not really bad. It's not really Bruce. It's Alfred that's doing all the heavy lifting.
This movie also could use more Alfred, more Commissioner Gordon, or it could just be about Catwoman.
Was Commissioner Gordon here at all?
He talks to the news a couple times.
Okay.
I did love Christopher Walken, though.
I was surprised. I've forgotten.
Really like this movie.
Right. It's just batshit.
Yeah.
Walken's great. He could have been in every scene. Feel free to isolate the audio of him saying expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
For any time we ramble about movie awards.
Okay, I'll
But yeah, everything works here except story, structure, and really any narrative direction. Other than that, everything works.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you about it before we dive into these details even more. Batman Returns was released June 19th of 1992, the 10th number one movie of that year. Won its opening weekend with $45.6 million, which was, at that time, the biggest weekend of all time. The biggest weekend to date. Taking that record from Batman, which held the title for 3 years since 1989, with a $40.4 million opening weekend. Forgot to double check what broke the record. I'm almost positive it's Jurassic Park.
I'm also bet $5 that it's Jurassic
Park. Right, right. About a year after this. Obviously, nothing was even close. This was the equivalent of the Avengers' opening, don't open your movie. Second place was the fourth weekend of Sister Act, which made $7.7 million. Batman Returns easily won its second weekend, $25.4 million, held off the debuting Kurt Russell action flick Unlawful Entry. Sure, that exists.
Sure.
I think I saw that.
Which... I mean, hey, you turned on, I'm going to say TNT, Kurt Russell was there. It could have been this.
Now, I think I'm old enough as to where I actually probably went to the theater and saw that.
You know, tickets were cheap back then.
Right.
I got to say that this era, like 92 to 94, I saw a ton of movies in the theater because my best friend, Rachel Vassar, was a child of divorce and her dad had her on the weekends and he didn't want to deal with children. So he took us to the movies.
Also, there was that beautiful thing called a dollar movie. Remember those?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, man. Huge part of my misspent youth.
Right.
Man, you want to talk about something that has seen its last day. I don't know what's going to happen with movie theaters after the pandemic, but that rung of the movie-going ladder is gone forever.
Yeah.
And what a shame. A part of my childhood, it was the Northway Mall Cinema. It wasn't a dollar. It was maybe $3.25. But that meant that if you were 14, you could buy a ticket and, like, either talk or make out through half the movie, then just buy a ticket for the next show and see the part you missed. Kids don't know. Kids don't know. Batman Returns won its third weekend, but that was a photo finish. Batman was number one, $13.8 million. The debuting A League of Their Own was number two, $13.7 million. The debuting Boomerang was three, $13.6 million. Less than $200,000 separating those top three. And A League of Their Own did pull ahead, finished number one the following weekend. Batman Returns fell to fourth. Universal Soldier debuted and was in second. Boomerang was in third. Batman Returns spent 6 weeks in the top 10, nine in the top 15, earning $162.8 million. It is the number three movie of 1992, behind only Aladdin, and fellow Christmas movie Home Alone 2. In unadjusted dollars, in spite of how big of a hit this is, if you don't adjust for inflation, this is the third worst grossing Batman movie.
Really?
To receive a wide release.
This is
all of the Batmans. I'm not counting Catwoman.
Right, right.
But all of the movies with Batman in them, other than a couple of the latter-day animated movies have received like a tiny limited release, putting those aside, this made whatever I just said it made, $162.8 million. Other than that, Batman and Robin only made $107 million. After that, you have to go to the Adam West version in 1966, which... Wow. You know, like $2 million because it was the 60s. All the others that you can name made more than this. Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises are one and two.
Does that count?
No, that and The Killing Joke were never in even 200 theaters.
I didn't know that.
Very limited releases. But every Batman movie makes a lot of money. They keep making them. Like nearly every Batman movie, they thought about putting Robin in this one. And as you can tell, this had a script that went through some drafts. One of them had Robin, and it went all the way to casting Robin and doing the costume fitting with Marlon Wayans cast and ready to go.
What?
No.
As the Boy Wonder.
Oh, I feel robbed!
Yeah.
I think...
That would have been awesome!
I'm 50. I'm like 50-50 on that. But again, it's like he could not have made
at the height of his
powers. He couldn't have made this movie any worse. No, that's just...
I think.
And then you get a complete footnote really cool. of a human being, Chris O'Donnell, 3 years later. No, it should have been Marlon Wayans.
Yeah. I wonder why they didn't stay with that. Well, I guess it was a different director. Was Batman and Robin or
Batman Forever was the next one, and that's when they switched over to Joel Schumacher's Camp Factory. not like this is not Batman right. Returns is also incredibly campy. It's just dark campy instead of neon campy.
Right.
But wow, so that means that in Batman Forever they recast two characters originally cast with black actors with white actors.
Hmm. Yes, they did.
Who was the other one? Who was the other one?
Billy Dee Williams was supposed to play Two-Face. He plays Harvey Dent in Batman.
Oh.
And like his contract said he was going to play Two-Face when that became a thing, and they bought out his contract to cast Tommy Lee Jones for reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Who is not a good... Anyway, different...
Right.
Well,
right.
Hey,
I'm sure we'll get there, yeah.
Yeah.
speaking of recasting, the original Catwoman was Annette Bening was cast and confirmed for this movie.
She was a little sex pot in the early 90s. I think that that part of her career is forgotten. But like, if you look at like her in The Grifters and Postcards from the Edge and Bugsy, she's literally like Catwoman, right? Like the dangerous, sexy lady.
She dropped out due to pregnancy. And then there was, and then all of Hollywood was in.
Warren Beatty's baby?
I think. How old is that person? We'll figure it out.
Okay.
That person would be like 28. I don't know. I don't know anything about that family. All of Hollywood was then in running to replace Annette Bening. Michelle Pfeiffer beat out Raquel Welch, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Madonna, Ellen Barkin, Cher, Bridget Fonda, Lorraine Bracco, Jennifer Beals, and Susan Sarandon.
Oh, Susan
and of course
Sarandon.
The Sean Young of it all.
And Sean Young wanted the part and showed up to, I think, Tim Burton's house in a homemade costume to try to make the case and was sent away.
Aww.
But I feel like Sean Young influenced Michelle Pfeiffer consciously or unconsciously.
Probably.
I just really feel like the ways that Michelle Pfeiffer conveys that she is unhinged owe a lot to Sean Young as a performer.
Batman Returns did receive 2 Oscar nominations. It was nominated for Best Visual Effects, but lost to Robin.
Is it Terminator 2? Judgment
no,
Day?
No, this is a movie you have watched recently, not for this podcast.
Bram Stoker's Dracula?
No, it lost to Death Becomes Her.
Oh, okay.
Which had... certainly had visual effects. I don't know how good they were, but they were there. Also, Alien Cubed was nominated. Also lost Best Makeup, was nominated for Best Makeup. Lost to a movie you watched not for this podcast.
Bram Stoker's Dracula?
This time it's Bram Stoker's Dracula.
That's a deserving win for Bram Stoker's Dracula. Yikes.
And I'm not going to get into the whole Batman franchise because that is gigantic and we'll get back to it. But a spinoff with Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman returning in her own vehicle was developed and in production. It originally would have had her in a desert location from the comics that was full of superheroes and would have deconstructed, you know, the traditional male hero character. Went into development hell, stayed in development hell, was completely rewritten several times, and eventually became the Halle Berry Catwoman. It bears no resemblance to the original script, but that movie was originally a spinoff of this movie with Michelle Pfeiffer, and all of us, especially Halle Berry, are worse off for that not happening.
That movie was so bad.
I would like to confirm that Annette Bening has 4 of Warren Beatty's children.
Oh, wow.
Was one about that time?
Her son, Steven, is 27 years old.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah.
Damn it, Warren. You couldn't have waited 6 to 9 months.
No, I think that Michelle Pfeiffer is perfect in this movie.
Oh, no. That's better. Though everyone but Annette Bening is better off for that change.
Right.
I kind of feel like Annette Bening, I probably would have preferred her because I think that she would have had a little more subtlety. Michelle is just at times gets to be a little too much for me. Like, you know, it carries on. Like, I don't know what kind of training or studying she did, like, how a cat moves, but I think she did a great job on a lot of, like, the little intricacies of cat movement and whatnot. But just sometimes it's just like, okay, let's bring it back down. Come on, Michelle. Let's come on right back down.
Well, everyone's going for it. There's no one in this movie that is not operating at 11 at absolutely all times.
Oh, yeah.
To the point where the Penguin character should not work even like moment to moment. It's so weird and so over the top. Oh, that's a take and proceed.
So I think that maybe I'm in the same. I feel the same way that Camila feels about Catwoman, about Penguin. It's sometimes it's just like a little bit too much for me. And I think that the main thing that I really struggle with is this part where he is a folk hero. Like when the one chick is like, you're the coolest role model that any kid could have. I'm like, this is a very upsetting, dirty Eggman.
Yeah.
Like, I have been a teenager. I have been around teenagers and they're not going to be like, I love this ugly guy.
Right. Yeah. No.
Right. Like, unless maybe if they made him like an if they positioned Penguin, I know that Marilyn Manson hadn't happened yet, but if they positioned Penguin as like the hero of the goth youth, And it was like all of the misfits in Gotham come together and love him. That would make sense to me and actually be a really cool way to explore what the hell it's like living in Gotham.
Right.
Which is a part of Batman lore that I am interested in.
Yeah.
You are sort of describing the movie Joker.
I know. I literally was just about to say Joker is still terrible. It's still terrible. That doesn't mean that it couldn't be done well.
Sure. Right. Work yeah. with Penguin.
Yeah, DeVito, he did. I want to give him his props for all the work that he put into that character, because damn, like he came in there and like did the damn thing. And I know it's probably the whole point of the character, but oh my God, he's so disgusting. And just like everything with all the grunts and stuff. And then the fact that he's just like, what, chewing gushers throughout the and licorice throughout the entire.
Gushers full of oil.
Right. He's just always got something on his like, spittle coming out of his mouth.
And just the intense Humpty Dumptiness of him.
Yeah.
I don't know why his shape bothers me more than his face.
Oh, like, 1,000%.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't exist. Because you know people who are, you don't really know people who are constantly oozing black goo, but you know people who are unattractive in the face parts. You don't know anyone who is bizarrely egg-shaped.
No, but no. I mean, I guess that's, again, we're supposed, this is giving us reason. Again, you know, zero magic or all the magic. So it's like, you know, how he came to be, like, we never saw baby Penguin, so we don't, and to push parents to the edge of, like, actually throwing your kid over a bridge, and, like, that's got to be, like, whatever the grotesque deformant was. And then wasn't there a mention of, like, there was a hint of, like, circus folk, like, his parents were circus people, or?
I thought that he washed ashore on a circus, and that the circus folk raised him. I thought that was how the circus angle came to play.
Gotcha, because I remember hearing something about so-and-so, the Birdman, and I didn't know if that was supposed to be his real daddy, or...
Oh, I have no idea.
But no, because he spent his entire life, he washed straight into that abandoned zoo still with animals in the middle of town.
Which makes sense in Gotham. Penguins
find him.
Right.
Yeah, sure, fine. Yeah, there's some mention of circus people, but no, he didn't. He spent the entire time in the sewer with the Penguins.
That's what I thought, because his whole spiel with Walk-In was that I want to be up top. Like, I've spent all my life below, and now... it's time for me to emerge back on top or whatever.
Really? Are the Penguin and the Little Mermaid different characters? Not in any real way.
But yes, his shape was very off-putting. And I think it really hit me when the first scene where he's walking? He's like dangling the fish at him. And we see him without his clothes on, like he's in his full, like, you know, long johns. And I'm like, wow. Okay.
And he waddles. It's, yeah. Very unpleasant.
It is. And I also got distracted a lot with thinking, trying to remember, does Danny DeVito actually just kind of walk like that, or is he putting in effort?
He does. Oh, yeah. He does. Yeah. I like the newspaper headline where it's like, I feel 5 feet tall. Like,
yes.
It's that scene that begins with him in bed. Like, obviously, that character was at the gross threshold a lot. Every element of that scene pushed it over. The way he keeps eating the fish, even with everyone looking at him, where he bites the guy's nose and hangs on. Like, most of this movie works, but there's a couple of scenes where it's like, you're high on your own supply here. You think that everything that you're creating is brilliant, and some of it is not.
Right. And I was kind of curious. It was PG-13. Okay. And then the whole scene with him and Catwoman in his room. Starting off with, there's the pussy I was looking for.
And then when she says to Batman, he's like, this can be hard. And she says, feels more like semi-hard. So I saw this movie in the theater as an 8-year-old child. And have you ever gone on a roller coaster that you didn't really want to be on?
Yes.
It was too scary for you.
Yes.
And then you spend the entire time you're on the roller coaster just being like, it's almost over. It's almost over. It's almost over. That was me watching this movie.
Get me out of here.
I literally, like, white knuckling it through the movie. And the moment where I was like, I don't want to be here, I hate this, was when Catwoman scratches that mugger's face.
Uh-huh.
Like, early on, when she, like, her first night out as Catwoman, she scratches someone's face.
Mm-hmm.
And they show the, like, the line of blood go down his face. And I remember, like, disassociating, essentially. I was, like, imagining walking out of the theater and imagining walking down the street. I was, like, trying to think about what is outside of this theater. Where did we park? That kind of stuff. I remember this so clearly, just not wanting to be there at all. Fortunately, watching it again as a 9-year-old from the safety of my home on Homebox, right. I was like, this movie is great and I love it. But I'm really glad I was able to, like, overcome that initial trauma. But yeah, like we talked last week about how upset I was watching District 9.
Right.
I had a similar experience as a child watching Batman Returns. And Colin told me that when he went to see it, there were other families with kids there who left.
Oh, wow. And right, I could see that.
An upsettingly violent and double entendre laden movie.
Yeah. It's just not a place, like, I can understand how folks, oh, it's a Batman movie. Sure, let's go take the kids. It's like the whole family. And then you get like 20, 30 minutes in. It's like, okay, we have made a poor decision. Let's go.
Right. You know, the whole thing with Batman is that Batman is for children, but it is also, if you look at it in its face, a very serious adult story. So you can make very serious adult Batman stories. And it is very hard for these movies to try to have it both ways. And honestly, they shouldn't. They should be making grown-up movies for about Batman that hopefully aren't all as grim and upsetting and worthless as Joker. And they should be making kids' movies about Batman, which are fun and exciting and involve detecting and Robin and good stuff.
And I assume that maybe that's what Gotham was supposed to be.
I think so. I only watched a couple episodes of that show because I had similar feelings of this is all very gross and unpleasant and I don't like it.
I just kind of get really, like, I watched maybe like the first 3 seasons of Gotham and then it just got to be like really annoying because I've never read a Batman comic. And I think, you know, Batman, Michael Keaton is probably like my first real experience with him, other than I knew Adam West existed and all that stuff when I was growing up, but we never really watched it. So I always get really lost in the Batman canon. And then, like, mm-hmm. Gotham, they kind of had, for my understanding, like, they took a lot of liberties with a lot yes. of the different characters and stuff. And I was, like, really getting, like, caught up with, well, who is this guy supposed to be? And they were never really clear a lot. Is this supposed to be young Joker? Or is it supposed to be baby Riddler? Or, like, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so I get really lost in all of that. And I think that was why I was like, okay, I can have, you know, these 90s versions of Batman and Nolan's Batman, but I cannot bring Gotham into the mix. It's just too much.
My sister is the same way with any comic book property. She's always like, well, what is it really? What's canon?
Right.
And it's like, it's comics. Everything is canon. There's no really.
But there
everything
must be.
And nothing.
Right, like, exactly.
I had a couple of years where I was buying comics. And other than very non-Marvel and DC standalone stuff, which is kind of what I dug anyway, literally everything and nothing. They will be like, all of this is canon, including this series where all of your familiar Marvel characters live in the Old West. Because 20 years ago, we made multiverses, so everything counts. Which also means that literally nothing counts, because right. we can kill them and then be like, yep, we're switching multiverses to one where we didn't kill him. Everything and nothing counts.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the things that worked with the Marvel Cinematic Universe was that it was relatively self-contained. Everything is real. That is no longer going to be the case. And we'll see how that affects our enjoyment of it.
What do you mean? That's not
good. WandaVision.
I mean, they have introduced the multiverse to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so Loki can have a TV show in the universe where he has the Tesseract and, you know.
Okay,
they
I
can
quit.
Do TV shows. They can do movies with dead characters, yada, yada, yada.
I quit. I would like to resign from the Marvel exactly Universe now. Right. You know, we've told all the stories that I want, that I need to be told right now. Stark is dead. Chadwick is actually dead.
Right.
People are talking shit on Shuri. I know.
Shuri's an anti-vaxxer.
I'm not ready for this to be true.
Right.
You know, Okoye is like, I think I'm getting called up because I'm both alive and not problematic. Guess it's my franchise now.
Right.
Anyway, that has something to do with something. I was not allowed to see this as a child, and turns out that was correct.
Yeah.
But the reason for the problem that, you ran into and why so many families were leaving, the toy blitz for this movie was everywhere, to the point where when he got into that Batmobile, I was thinking, now that's the perfect Batmobile. And then I went, oh, well, it's just the one I remember from my youth, without having seen this movie, because that's how ubiquitous all of the stuff and accoutrement. That's like Dick Tracy. I've never seen Dick Tracy, but everything in the world, I had Dick Tracy t-shirts and shit.
You should watch Dick Tracy. Dick Tracy really? Is what this movie wants to be.
Is it better?
I think yes.
It's I've seen it once.
Beautifully speaking of Warren Beatty, it just nails the, this is fake, but right. take it seriously.
Yeah, like, I guess it was kind of, I remember it being like actually visually beautiful, just with all the costuming and the coloring. And I do recall, was it Al Pacino? Was he in?
Al Pacino's one of the, it's like all of the bad guys are like super famous actors under heavy makeup.
Right.
It's just really good.
Well, it's on the never ending list. before we move on, because we should rate it. At a certain point, I wrote this Catwoman walked so that Harley Quinn could run, forgetting that I'm talking about the same franchise. Like, am I right? Like, did Catwoman just get phased out, slightly tweaked and replaced in the Batman universe by Harley Quinn?
I think
you might be right. I mean, so Harley Quinn was first introduced in Batman the Animated Series, which came out around this time. I'm not sure exactly when. And that Catwoman was very much the I'm a burglar, the Anne Hathaway version of the character, where it's like, I'm a burglar. I don't really operate in your world of morality. I don't really want to be a hero, but I'm not evil. I just want to steal things and live my happy life. Not to me, the most compelling version of the character really lives or dies on the chemistry with Bruce Wayne. Harley Quinn captures the unhingedness of Michelle Pfeiffer Catwoman. And so I think that that might be the shift that you're seeing.
Yeah.
I was also like to point out that there was a moment in this film where when Selina first sees Batman, and she's like, wow, the Batman, or is it just Batman? And he never answered her, and I'm still a little upset about that because that has been like the biggest thorn in my side where Nolan's Batman. Right, where Nolan's Batman, you know, what's his butt? Christian Bale. Where he's like, the Batman. And I'm like, it shouldn't be the Batman. It just should be Batman.
It's like when you talk to someone and you're like, is your name Leslie or Leslie? And they're like, it doesn't matter, whichever. And I'm like,
choose. Well, if you don't like that, there's a movie coming out in a year and a half, maybe, that'll really bother you.
Why? What?
What is what?
Because it's called The Batman.
Oh, is this?
Oh, okay.
The actual title of the film is.
Is this Ben Affliction Batman, or is there a new Batman?
There's a new Batman. It's Robert Pattinson.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That did like really. That's grating my cheese. Like I saw the trailer and it's just The Batman. I'm like, all right. And just.
My gut feeling is that in the press they were calling him the Batman, but he would think of himself as Batman. That's my gut feeling.
Right. I don't know.
I have to say, Michael Keaton does a great job of looking overpowered by lust when you can only see the bottom half of his face. Also, that part where she licks him and then he licks his lips. One of the sexiest things ever captured on film.
Yeah, I was a little, I that pulled my attention. I was like, okay, Michael, I see what you, and I just kind of wonder, was that a Michael thing or was that a Tim thing? Was that in the direction? But I still don't really like Keaton as Bruce Wayne.
No, he doesn't make sense as Bruce Wayne. That scene where he confronts Christopher Walken, I'm like, this is not a Bruce Wayne activity. Send Batman.
Like, why did you even come here today?
Right.
But the mansion looks great. Listen, it's the Tim Burtonist Tim Burton. Let's bounce back and forth between overly production designed gutters and giant gothic buildings. Great. Yes. You have got the director for this.
Thanks, Tim.
Let's rate it. I added 1 point to my final score for that moment where Christopher Walken steals a key from a monkey and the monkey looks really surprised and upset about it. That landed me on a 73. Robin?
Camila, go next.
Okay. I have been wavering. this entire time between like 65 and 75. And basically, most of these points go to Christopher Walken, Danny DeVito's portrayal as Penguin, and Michelle's portrayal as of Catwoman. So 72.
72. Okay. Again, close scores. Have we been doing this too long? We're starting to agree. That's not...
We're syncing up.
Robin?
I'm going to go 80.
Okay.
And I have to say that feels low for me.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I think of this movie, like, my friend Connor watched it last night just because it's Christmas, I guess, and he tweeted, like, a near-perfect movie. And I am sure that if I had not watched it the same day, I would have been like, yes, near-perfect movie. I think that it's one of those things where sometimes you're in the right mood for it, and it feels like the greatest thing you've ever seen. And then yesterday, I wasn't necessarily in the right mood for it, and I had more of a what reaction to a lot of stuff in here. But I gotta say, I respect any movie that knows what it wants to do as much as this movie does, even if none of us earthlings can figure out what that is. So
I fear that a lot of my bias against this movie, it just has to do with the fact that now I have been introduced to Nolan's Batman trilogy.
Oh,
I prefer that, the little more darker, a little more grimmer, a little more grimy, a little more serious Batman, as opposed
to
this.
Definitely connected to reality in a way that this movie is not.
Right, exactly. Like, the villains, they're like, you can see, like, yeah, I totally get that some dude that's got like facial scars will like paint up his face and then go off and, you know, do crime. Like, that I get, but I don't understand. Like, I don't understand how Selina now has powers because she fell out a window and like 80 cats licked her face.
Right.
But yeah, and I also, maybe if I had eased myself in, and I probably should have watched Batman and then Batman Returns.
I don't think so. So the thing about Batman is that Batman, like, going back to the whole perfect movie thing, Batman really has a fantastic balance of Burton weirdness and studio control, is my best guess. As either Burton checked himself, and then after Batman was such a huge hit, he was like, no, all of my ideas are great. Or the studio was like, and he reined it in. Like, Batman's an incredibly bizarre movie, but it feels more tethered
than this one,
cohesive than this. Also, Prince.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
But I do have to shout out that Susie and the Banshees song, Face to Face, that they play at the party. It's so good. Love that song.
They also really shout out to the ballroom version of Super Freak.
Yes.
All of which lands us on a 75. 75 is the score. That feels fine. I mean, there would be people like Connor who thinks this is perfect. That will be shockingly low.
Right.
That sounds right for a really cool, fun movie with gigantic plot problems.
And gigantic rubber duck mobiles.
Yeah. That's the image. I have the Tim Burton Blu-ray set, and the one production sketch in the little book is like a sketch of Penguin's car, and it's like, Kay, how did you get there, though? Like, what made you go, it's Duck?
Right.
Like, okay. Anyway, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. As a reminder, the bingo card is on hiatus since we've got some specialty business to attend to these couple of episodes. So we will go straight to You Can't Handle the Truth. Let's start with Camila this week.
I watched The Ides of March, which you can hear about on my other podcast, Down to Watch. I watched Last Christmas, which you guys advised me against last year, which I actually thought I was fine with it. And I think and I don't know, it's just because I already knew what the ending was. And then I was like, okay, this is fine.
To be fair, I haven't seen it. I just know that plot will force me to cry for 3 days and therefore refuse.
Plus, there was also, I couldn't understand why the only music played was George Michael music.
It is officially an adaptation of that song. Like, this is the George Michael song, Last Christmas.
Yeah.
This script is adapted from the lyrics to that song.
Is the song literal?
Now it is not when he wrote it, but
okay.
But Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, and someone said, "Aha, I've got something."
Right, but like, Yeah, so all of the music is the George Michael music. And I had come up with like a much more fantastical plot, because it was like, I knew that, you know, she got the heart, the dude's heart, and he was a ghost or whatever. But I assumed that she was in a coma. And the reason why all this George Michael music was playing is that she like loves George Michael, and somebody was playing this music for her in her hospital bed. And this is all like some
that's better.
Dreams.
That is better.
But no, and it was never really explained. So, but finally, I also watched Freaky, which I thought was delightful.
What is Freaky?
The Freaky Friday with Vince Vaughn.
Right.
Yeah, like, damn it. Like, Vince Vaughn is great. And I always get a kick out of, like, a scene, like a 6'7" grown man play a teenage girl. Yeah. as long as it's done well. And it was good. It was, like, you know, proper... good amounts of horror, good amounts of like campy slasher, good amounts of dark comedy. I would recommend it.
And I won't, you know, we'll go listen to Down to Watch to find the full take, but short take on Ides of March? Okay. I'm really excited to listen to that episode because I have similar feelings.
Ryan is pretty.
Yeah. That is a frustrating movie.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Freaky is the third or fourth best Friday the 13th movie. There are a lot of Friday the 13th movies that aren't really Friday. That, like, you don't have to be in the Friday the 13th series to be a Friday the 13th movie. And Freaky is way up the list.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, everything that that series has is in Freaky. Executed better and with more fun.
Yeah,
you know? I've seen it 1.5 times now because it was playing at the drive-in after Die Hard, so I showed up for Die Hard, and despite having already seen Freaky, I was like, I'll watch until they do the body swap in the high school. And
wait, what does it have to do? Are you saying Friday the 13th when you mean to say Freaky Friday?
No, Friday the 13th. Saying, like, it takes place
there's
on
dream stuff.
It takes place on Friday the 13th.
That's Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right.
Friday the
13th.
Yes.
Right.
Is there Jason in this?
No.
There is a tall Jason-esque killer. It takes place on Friday the 13th. And there's weird supernatural stuff with the killer's evil spirit. Therefore, this is a Friday the 13th movie, even if officially it's not. To me.
I'll allow it.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, my total inability to remember the difference between Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street continues apace.
Wait a minute. The one with Nightmare in the title is the one with the dreams. Dreams.
This would be a lot easier if there were anything to do with Friday the 13th in the Jason series.
Admittedly, yes.
We've recently watched one where it may never have been Friday.
Really? Let alone the Friday the 13th.
On a Monday through Wednesday. What the hell?
Yeah, but I like the little girl. I don't remember her name. Who the other star in Freaky? She really did a great job conveying like what it would be like to wake up in somebody else's body, and especially like so different. So not just to give Vince props, but the girl. Damn it!
Catherine Newton is her name.
Thank you.
The main girl, the main of the three girls in Blockers. She's in Three Billboards. She's on Big Little Lies.
Yes, that's where I knew her from. Big Little Lies. Okay, so yes, shout out to Catherine for her ever-growing acting chops. I think she's going to be someone who does well in this movie-making business.
It is always really nice to see child actors come into their own.
Right.
Robin?
I watched Mank.
And?
Let's go.
Which you think would have been better as Mank!
Why don't you give your perfect review?
More like Mank, am I right?
Mank.
Mank.
Like, meh. This is a very hard joke to convey over audio.
It's better in a message.
Yes.
I just don't get it, Sean. I don't get it. What is why?
It's good.
Is it?
And that's about it. Like
I watched it. I made it to the end, but I feel like I probably wouldn't have if I didn't feel like I needed to participate in the discourse.
I don't know. Like, I reviewed it and I don't know what to say about it. It's part of it is just if you want to make a movie about the movies, that can be fun. Don't make a movie specifically about a much better movie. Then you're just like, it's a whole thing about a good screenplay. Would have been great if this movie had a good screenplay, but it doesn't. It just has good photography and some good actors. Like, it gets around to being kind of intriguing in the back half. The front half, I'm like, what is this even about? What is the point of this movie?
I definitely liked it better towards the end, which made me feel good about sticking through. But it's not like I liked it a lot. And I don't understand a lot of the stylistic choices. Like, you know, they open with full credits like an old movie, but they make them look like modern credits, right? They're very clearly digital credits. It's shot in black and white, but very clearly on digital. There's fake cigarette burns in the corner.
The fucking fake cigarette burns.
When I saw that, I was like, am I hallucinating? Am I punishing myself? And Googled it, and other people saw other people complaining about it. And like I tweeted, I wanted to walk into the sea. And then additionally, I just can't get past this thing where Gary Oldman is in his 60s and all of the women who are cast against him are in their 30s. Literally, you know, Amanda Seyfried's character. Who is she? Marion Davies.
She's
a real person.
William Randolph Hearst's most significant mistress and the nominal subject of Citizen Kane.
They are meant to be the same age. Like, those two real life humans were the same age, and they cast a 62-year-old man and a 33-year-old woman. And the woman cast as his wife is even younger. She's like 30. It's just gross, very distractingly gross. And then Gary Oldman, like, I don't like him. I think that, you know, I love some of his really cartoonish performances. Like, I think he's fantastic in The Professional and The Fifth Element, and like, even to a lesser extent, like The Book of Eli. I love him in that mode. I don't get him in serious mode, and then especially this kind of serious mode where he is playing a cartoon, but I'm meant to think that it's a real person. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know why he's in so much stuff. Like, I know that I'm not supposed to speak ill of Sirius Black as a Potterhead, but like, every time he shows up in something, it's something that anyone could have done and a lot of people could have done better.
Y'all not gonna come here. Y'all not gonna come for Gary Oldman now. I'm not gonna sit here and
you like Gary Oldman
and let this happen.
Okay, talk more about this, because I don't get, like, I do really like him. And you know what? I like him as Commissioner Gordon, right? And I like him as Sirius Black. I kind of forget about those, like, work for hire roles that he does. Whenever he is trying and not chewing the scenery, I don't get him.
Okay, so Sean, go on. Continue your thought about, you know, how you, like, anybody could have done it.
I just think, well, stuff like this, stuff like the Winston Churchill movie that he won an Oscar for, to me, that's not what he's good at. I mean... Yes, I turned against him a little bit because he's at least a sometimes abuser, but...
What?
Yeah, he beat up his wife. But he also apparently doesn't like the Jewish people.
Fuck me.
I recently learned.
You know what?
I know, it's like, don't you wish that, like...
Social media didn't exist?
Happen once a month?
Allowing us to do this, but, like, it's also made me very aware of how much everyone I used to like sucks.
Right. You know what? Fuck it. I mean, say what you want to say. I'm not dying on anybody's hill for Gary Oldman. That's not.
The point is, I like him in some things, like Robin's saying, he's an odd presence. He's an odd presence. And when he's just doing a normal thing, I'm like, we have normals. We could get a normal any day.
Get a normie.
Well, that's the other thing I wanted to say about this movie is that of the, like, supporting cast, and it's a big cast, right? You know, it's the movies. It's a big business, right? Many of the players act like they're in The Artist, and that they're acting like they're in an old movie, and it's like pre-method, and they are being very performative. And then half of the players are acting like this is a movie made in 2020. And it just feels like the whole movie can't really decide exactly what it wants to be.
I would like to see some sort of discussion with Fincher, because I am always really here for a Fincher film. But then I saw the trailer for this and the concept behind it, and I have zero interest in watching this movie. And even though I do enjoy watching Gary Oldman, I, again, zero interest in watching this movie, basically because of, like, also what you're saying, like, how, you know, this, how these, no one knows, no one can agree upon, like, what this movie is supposed to be. Like, nobody really knows what's going on. It's, yeah, I just want to know why he decided to do this, because it's just,
it's
like...
his dad's script.
It's okay. His dad's unproduced script.
Okay.
He really wanted to get made, and now
daddy,
his dad's no longer with us.
Baked in the pie.
Yeah. That's not a good enough reason.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to...
I actually thought about you, Camila, while I was like, because I know that you like Fincher, and I didn't know that you like Gary Oldman, but that tracks, and I just was like, this is the kind of movie where... there, I feel like there is a 40% chance that you'd watch it and you'd be like, actually, I really liked it. Kind of like with Joker, when I was Joker, what? The part of your movie fandom that doesn't quite make sense for me, this might fit in there.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe there's some small piece of me that's like some 55-year-old white dude. I don't know.
Anybody who grew up as enmeshed in pop culture as the three of us have, has a part of them that is a 55-year-old white dude.
Right. Correct. Most parts of me. Yeah, I didn't dislike it, mainly because it's one of those things. Everybody here is talented. I think the cinematography is great. I think the score is great. I think it's directed well when it knows what it's doing. But I wouldn't tell anybody, oh, you got to see this. I would give it a good score, but not a recommendation, if that makes sense.
Is this a $20 rental right now, or is this like a normal rental?
No, it's
rental?
Free on Netflix.
Oh.
Netflix.
Okay. Yeah. I might.
So
is it like,
is this worth 2 hours of
time? That was my next question. How long is it?
I think
I'll tell
it's
you
normal
what it's,
length.
I'll tell you what it's not worth is the last 6 years of David Fincher's life. Like, yeah. I know he's done TV. This is his first movie since Gone Girl. And it's like, this is what he waited for?
Right.
This is no Gone Girl.
No.
That is sadness. Never mind. I'll just go watch Gone Girl again.
Yeah.
Speaking of Netflix releases, I'm sure there's a reason why I'm not supposed to like The Prom, but I was tapping my toes and it was fun. So sure. Like, it's bright and silly and fun in a nice Broadway. It's a nice Broadway spectacular with people singing and dancing and learning lessons and, man, that was refreshing. It's I've heard the big thing is the if you're not familiar, this is a recent Broadway musical. I think it only debuted in 2018.
Oh, wow.
That is being made into a star-studded Netflix movie by Ryan Murphy with Meryl Streep and Nicole Kidman and Kerry Washington and James Corden and Andrew Rannells. But it's nominally about the central character is a young girl who is not, her small town in Indiana is not letting her go to the prom because she wants to bring a woman rather than a man. And it's one of those with the old school rules. That's the subject of the movie. Joe Ellen Pellman, who is a true unknown, was really like plucked out of nothing and given this part, is the lead of the movie. And apparently in the Broadway version, it's the show is clearly all about them. And the movie like gives a lot more time to the famous grown-ups, like especially Corden. Apparently they really increased that part to give James Corden more to do.
Does he have does he have a library of compromising material on everybody who makes movie musicals?
Honestly.
How is he such a thing? He's fine. I don't hate him.
No, he's fine. I just don't understand why he's always there.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think he has a lot of blackmail.
Yeah.
That would make perfect sense. But that aside, yes, it's too long. It's over 2 hours long. And it's has a little bit too much of these side characters. But it's pretty and the songs are catchy. And like, man, do you need this more than you need Mank or other Mank-like things in your life right now? Like, get two cocktails in as if you were buying tickets to a show beforehand and put it on and have a good time. It'll be nice. The exact opposite experience. The Sound of Metal is really good, too. Or I think there's no the, speaking of our Batman debate, Sound of Metal. Awards hopeful with Riz Ahmed about a itinerant heavy metal drummer who suddenly loses his hearing.
Yikes.
It is incredibly hard to watch because it is so well directed in making you hear his hearing go away. And it's relatable in a really dreadful way because he's not accepting it and he's kind of living as if it's going to come back, and you, the audience, know he does it isn't. And man, it's hard to watch. The performance is fantastic. The movie's really, really good. And that's free on Amazon Prime. Hey, everything's free on a streaming service. Wow. But I highly recommend both of those movies for very different reasons.
Cool.
Let's draw a movie.
Let's cut in us drawing a movie 2 weeks ago. I do want to preface this. I think that it never totally made it on air that we drew our Christmas movies a couple weeks in advance for Sean's benefit. Sean, our fan of the drive-in, was hoping he would get to watch one of our Christmas draws on the big screen. And Sean...
It didn't happen at all.
That's surprising.
I guess I really thought... Like, at the time we did this, and I appreciate us breaking the format just to make my life a little bit better. At the time we did this, I think that weekend, three things on our list were playing, like Elf, Santa Claus, and something else. And so I was like, there's only a couple of movies on this list. Let's land on one. And we didn't. Right. And so I keep going to the drive-in to see holiday movies that were number one just because they're playing and it's there. I'm so reliant on the drive-in trips right now. I'm not even finding excuses for, well, here's why I have to go see How the Grinch Stole Christmas. I'm just like, fine, I don't care. Let's go.
Time to get out of my house.
Right.
This weekend, Starlight will reopen for their Christmas special of Polar Express and It's a Wonderful Life. And I'm like, sure, fine. It's, you know, great. I get to buy popcorn and watch things on a movie screen outside, though it may be, and cold though I may be. But for that reason, we drew early, including this draw. Let's draw a movie. This is about the most limited pool we will ever draw from. Here's why. We said last week there would be no more than one of our holiday light selections. We drew one. It was Batman Returns. So we will not go back to that well. We will not be watching Rocky IV or Shazam or Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, God. Eyes Wide Shut did not go to number one, did it?
It did.
You know it did. Yeah, I mean, God, I do not look forward to getting that. Yeah.
What? What? You don't want the 45-minute mask sex scene that goes nowhere? Why not? So, this week, and fittingly in our closest episode to the holidays, we're drawing a proper Christmas movie from the pool of 12 proper Christmas movies. That have gone to number one.
A lot of bombs in it. I'm nervous.
Well, we did not hit one of those bombs. We get to revisit many people. Really, one of the favorite movie of many people and a holiday classic. It's Home Alone. We will be watching.
Oh. I just watched that for whatever reason. It was on around Halloween, I think.
Because it's terrifying what he does to the poor wet bandit. Yeah, great. Batman Returns and Home Alone is a good holiday.
Yeah. I am down with that.
And isn't that appropriate?
It is.
It's for the most Home Alone Christmas of all time.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that hits hard. That hits deep.
Yeah.
But I was just gonna say that that's like the most Christmassy Christmas movie that we kind of get. Like,
yeah.
It's like you think Christmas movie, you think It's a Wonderful Life for Home Alone.
Yeah, seriously.
But before we go, Batman Returns was released June 19th of 1992. What was the number one song in America when Batman eventually returned?
This is in June. TLC?
Nope.
The Heights.
Ooh, is it The Heights? That went to number one.
It is not The Heights.
Is it Right Said Fred?
No, I think Right Said Fred is actually a little bit earlier.
Celine Dion?
Like I was saying that from Camilla.
Once again, if it's the 90s and you don't know, go ahead and guess.
Celine Dion? Oh, Mariah Carey.
Mariah Carey is correct.
Is it with
that Fantasy?
I'll Be There?
Robin is right. It is I'll Be There. You know, 5 years ago, I hated how much you hear All I Want for Christmas Is You. And no. When it became a meme, like when people, including Mariah Carey, started playing with how ubiquitous it was, then it got fun again.
I just heard it at the grocery store. That song is perfect.
That's like, there are two Christmas songs that I will listen to throughout the year, and that's one of them. And
what's the other one?
The other one is Christmas Time by Christina Aguilera.
I like to listen to metal in December. I don't know why. Like, I'm cold. Like, I picture, like, being in line outside of Metropole waiting to see, you know, Fear Factory or some shit in December. I'm like, yeah, this is right. Where my head is.
I listen to the blues.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good too. Go listen to some Christmas music that might make you sad because you're there already. That's the season.